Listen, you better never leave the U.S.
Well, I mean, that do you remember?
Once you're out of office.
What was it? Was it the trip to Austria where they had to redo the plumbing so that...
Oh, God.
You remember that?
So he brought his porta potty with him.
Yeah, because you know, lest the royal offal fall into the wrong hands.
It's sort of like.
I mean, that's why so you know that Bart Cop, bless his heart, you know, the boy in the bubble, the chimp in the bubble,
with the drop by door at the back.
Oh God!
Oh, did you get the thing from Southern Poverty Law?
Yeah.
Isn't it amazing all these people that we don't get to hear about on the news, and I'm sitting there going, why aren't we hearing about these people?
That's why I've decided to start referring to them as the National Press Corps.
I agree with you. But you know what I mean? It's like, say, with that and like the stories we were talking about a month ago, you know, about all these people getting caught with weapons and stuff around the U.S. And it was interesting. If you go to their site and go to their map, where they have the map of the U.S., and it's been a couple of states. Just see all the fun things going on in some of the states.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like, dang.
Yeah, fun in only the broadest sense of the word.
Yeah, I know.
Hey, Luke, have a happy new year.
You too.
And is it black eyed peas or corned beef and cabbage where you come from?
Well, you know how it is. I think probably honey grits.
Oh, okay. That's, yeah, that works too.
Hey, yeah. Enjoy the.
Gotta eat the lucky food on January 1.
I was going to say, enjoy your game. I'll enjoy mine.
Gonna try. Go Vols.
Go Mountaineers.
We'll see you, Luke.
Bye
now. And let's see, our good friend Preston calling in from Colorado. Hey, Preston, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. Thanks.
Thank you for waiting. I hope you're not covered up in snow yet.
We are covered up in snow here.
But
I've got a nice warm igloo, and so I'm in good shape.
Good deal.
Yeah. And it was, I didn't mind waiting to speak with you at all. It was, as always, fascinating radio, listening to you and your callers. Great stuff.
Well, thank you very kindly. I love these conversations.
Yeah. Do unto others. Definitely powerful words, for sure. And on this eve of, you know, possibly Saddam's death, I'd actually like to say a few words in defense of Saddam Hussein.
Go right ahead.
You know, not a popular guy at all. But he did have some interesting things going, at least... Him and his whole administration did do some interesting things regarding healthcare and education and some of the infrastructure that was going on in Iraq, and women had a lot of professional positions.
Yes.
And he even he was starting to work more with other countries, France, and doing some trade and doing cultural exchanges. And he tried to organize a poetry festival. And he was inviting back exiled poets who were, you know, had to flee for their lives. But he was saying they could come back, do this festival, and they'd be there. No harm would come to them.
Well, you know, he in many ways, Preston, he reminds me of Nero.
Okay.
Because Nero, you know, given the fact that our popular consciousness is about as deep as a squirrel, you know, we don't know that Nero was an incredibly popular leader. He was. He was beloved, in fact. And he had the same types of passions for the arts.
Okay.
You mentioned poetry. He was Nero appeared on the public stage and accompanied himself on the lyre to his own poetry. And the writing of poetry in ancient Rome was highly regarded.
Okay.
It was to ancient Rome where on almost an identical parallel, it was much as what the poetry of hip hop is today.
Okay.
And he would accompany himself my heavens, who was his teacher? Seneca? Was it Seneca that was Nero's teacher?
I'm not
you know
sure.
they were literally trying to raise up the philosopher king, you know, enlighten and but he went a little nuts. He went a little overboard. He inflamed the public opinion because somehow he demeaned the imperial see, if you will.
Yeah.
And you know, all we know, given our limited attention span, is the ancient maxim that Nero fiddled while Rome burned.
That's true.
When in fact, he probably didn't. And he goes on to get a bad rap because after the fire of Rome, a sect that was later deemed to be the Christians was blamed for the fire. And who's to say they didn't start it?
Yeah. And, you know, Iraq was definitely burning when Saddam took his country into that war with Iran. But, you know, as with the way we pitted Native American nations against each other, you know, our own masters of war kind of enjoyed seeing Iraqis and Iranians fighting each other. They're much more concerned when, pan-Arab feeling starts to get tossed around, you know, people cooperating with each other against, you know, foreign domination of the region, and that kind of radical nationalism is what they always referred to it in the U.S. security documents. But, you know, they don't care about communism or terrorism or any of that. It's radical nationalism that they try to stomp down.
Yeah, and isn't radical nationalism a sort of high-blown phrase for people who want to be exclusively free of the domination of another country?
Exactly. It's exactly that.
And, I mean, I'm hard pressed as an American to say that we had any business determining who led the Iraqis.
Right.
I'm hard pressed to say as an American that we have any business determining who runs Venezuela or Cuba, Bolivia, Chile, Argentina, Kuala Lumpur.
Right.
It's none of our business because I took seriously that the teaching of George Washington when he said avoid foreign entanglements, do business with them, but don't get wrapped up in their squabbles.
Exactly.
It seems as trenchant and valid a piece of advice today as it was when he first uttered them in, what was that, his farewell address, his valedictory from the presidency?
I believe so. I think it's in that book, The Sorrows of Empire, by Chalmers Johnson.
Exactly. You're right. You're absolutely right. So, you know, there were people who were oppressed under Saddam Hussein, but those were also people who were oppressed under Saddam Hussein for the same reason that there were groups of people who were suppressed and oppressed under Elizabeth I of England.
Right.
I mean, if we held, you know, me, you, Sherman, and the Wayback Machine, if we held Elizabeth I, deemed to be a great and enlightened leader of her time, if we held her to the same standards that the Bush administration has held Saddam Hussein, you would have to execute Elizabeth Rex.
Right. Or Donald Rumsfeld.
Exactly.
Co-conspirator. I think that's a big part of the reason why they want to kill him, because he is a witness.
Dead men tell no tales, Preston.
Yep. But also I noticed Amnesty International and other human rights and legal organizations have condemned both the trial and the death sentence.
Well, how can anybody of reasonable mind not?
Right.
I mean, this is not by way of an apologia for Saddam.
True.
But we're the ones, Preston. We are the ones who put in place the idea that the world would stand in judgment of individual leaders who did individually cruel, monstrous, inhuman things, and we coined a term. We called them crimes against humanity. We set that whole thing up, and then when it came time for us to actually follow it in one of our own adventures, we said no.
Yeah,
and it's nothing but absolute hypocrisy. You know, the other thing is that, and I never hear this. I never hear this, even though I think it's probably the most valid of all comparisons. Because if you listen to the right wing, it's always another Hitler, always Joe Stalin, blah 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 blah. He's Pol Pot.
Right.
No, he's not. You know who Saddam Hussein was, Preston? He was the Marshal Tito of his region.
Okay.
Because Marshal Tito took Bosnians, Herzegovinans, Albanians, Kosovars, Serbs, Croats, all of whom at any given time would be just as happy as slaughtering the others as doing anything else. You know, rather climb a tree and fight than stand on the ground and live in peace.
Yeah.
And he took all those disparate groups, held them together by virtue of his own dictatorial strength, and said, you know, we can make something nice out of this, or we can all just go to hell together. Let's make something nice, and the people who don't want to make nice, I'm going to kill.
Yeah, you know, I mean, there are so many communities in which the Sunni and the Shia, they live together, they intermarried.
Right.
All that kind of stuff. And, you know, immediately after the invasion, there was this talk of the Civil War, and they never got along anyway. So, you know, it became kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy or a manufactured prophecy to get these communities against each other.
And, well, exactly. And the people that we complained, do you remember it was in southern Iraq, and, oh, we found the mass graves, blah, blah, blah. And you got that out of the National Press Corps. I'm sorry, I'm trying to coin a new phrase here, Preston.
I like it. It's good.
You got that out of them, but you didn't get the second paragraph, and that those were the fact that those were the mass graves of the people that George H.W. Bush told, not asked, told to rise up against Saddam after the first Gulf War. They rose up. George H.W. Bush said, oh, we'll support you. You know, we're going to do that. Yeah, we're going to be right there for you. And then we were nowhere to be found, and they were, in fact, slaughtered.
Right. Or they could have been the mass graves from the sanctions, which had a lethal effect. You know, so many mass graves around the world. Could have been the mass graves of, you know, Suharto when he invaded East Timor with Gerald Ford's blessing, and, you know, lots of mass graves for sure. But actually, I wanted to talk about something constructive going on before I let you go. You were talking about rich people earlier and what they should do with their wealth kind of thing. And I noticed the founder of eBay, I forget his name, but he's been involved with a movie production company, and they've made a lot of good, thoughtful films like Good Night and Good Luck about Edward R. Murrow.
Really? He was behind that?
Yes, he was.
I had no idea.
And also North Country with Charlize Theron, who plays a female miner, I think.
I'm familiar with the film. She's a brilliant actress. She's really come a long way.
She sure has. And one other film they're involved with is the Gore film, An Inconvenient Truth. And since it's the season of gift giving and everything, well, this person helped to make available, he and other groups, 50,000 copies of that DVD, An Inconvenient Truth. And if people in your audience are teachers or they know teachers who might be interested, they can go to participate.net and fill out a form, and they can have a chance to receive a copy of that film.
That's wonderful.
I think so, too.
And thereby try to inform, educate, you know, I know the right wingers, Preston, they're screaming, it's fake, it's not real, whoa, you're indoctrinating our children.
Sure.
But you know what? In a way, it's sort of like the argument about Christianity. Yeah, good way to live your life, do unto others as you'd have them do unto you. And if you're wrong, you've still led a pretty good life at the end of it all. And if you're right, you know, you win the lottery when you die. To a certain extent, global warming is like that.
Yeah.
Let's assume for a moment that these right-wing freaks from the American Enterprise Institute and the Competitive Enterprise Institute and the Heritage Foundation and all these people who are given, they just have this open spigot of right-wing money flowing to them.
Yep.
to say that it's all wrong, it's all a lie. Let's assume that they're right. Let's assume that global warming is just a myth.
Let's hope they are.
Yeah, really. I would like for them to be right about this.
Right, but...
But, yeah. Let's assume for a moment that they're right. And let's assume for a moment that we choose to leave a smaller carbon footprint and that we live a little more simply.
Yep. Yep.
Don't we win in the end anyway?
Exactly.
I mean, do you see where I'm headed with that?
I sure do. I mean, you can put aside all the carbon, the global warming theories. I mean, there's the harsh reality of the destruction that's caused by the fossil fuel industry. Everything from West Virginia's mountains being blown up to, you know, these incredibly destructive pipelines in places like Nigeria, where one blew up recently.
What a horror.
You know, and they call the people who are taking the oil the criminals. But that's a joke. The people who are thieving the oil are the ones who built the pipeline and are taking out of the country at about $30 billion a year of it and giving nothing back to the people except a police state.
Well, isn't it? But that's the story of every colonial mercantilist economy,
yeah,
isn't it?
Exactly. It is.
I mean, and that's one of the things that gets under my skin about the free market is this idea that that there's something new about it. It's just lipstick on a pig, but it's still a pig.
Goes back to the Dutch East Indies, at least.
But, sure.
You know, in addition to their, you know, there's always been war and corruption and all that stuff, but, you know, there's always been an amazing resistance. and the people of Nigeria, they have so much to teach us about democracy and courage. People like Ken Sarawiwa,
mm-hmm.
who led some of the protests, ended up being executed. But still, he lived it. He lived by that Zapata saying. I think it was something like Emilio Zapata, something like, I'd rather
die on my feet
than live on my knees.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And there is genuine heroic value in that.
Yes.
Because, I mean, I tend to ascribe to the notion that once you're dead, you're dead. But you have a chance to live on in your ability to influence and make life better for other people.
I agree.
And in memory is immortality. In memory is eternity.
Yeah, and there are a lot of faiths that think that, you know, there's a part of us that's kind of eternal.
Mm-hmm.
Hindus and Buddhists, a lot of shamans, Christian mystics, you know, they say there's a soul that kind of continues on and maybe takes some other form or something.
And who am I to disagree with that? I just don't particularly buy into 5,000-year-old concrete mythologies.
Right.
I don't buy into the reality of Leda and the swan, and I don't buy into the idea of Adam and Eve riding to church on the back of a dinosaur.
Right. A great story, though. Great mythology that can maybe provide some guideposts.
Yeah, and it had meaning for individual cultures. And it had meaning for individual peoples.
Yeah.
And to the extent that we read it, we can still draw meaning out of it today. But to say that that everything in it is inerrant factual truth, when in fact, if it has any relevance at all, it's in its fluidity and its ability to speak to us in our time by extrapolation.
Right. We almost take meaning and worth out of it when we become so rigid in a kind of fundamentalism like that.
Yeah, it's the dogma that's the killer.
Right. You know, Joseph Campbell.
The power of myth, yeah.
Yeah, he did such amazing work on this issue. And also, do you know about Houston Smith?
No, I don't think so.
He's a very interesting theologian. He wrote a book called, I think, The World's Religions or something like that. And I remember the last chapter, he talks about his experience with Aborigines in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And he came to believe, like a lot of Western academics who have visited there, that they have something, they've retained something about the human mind that's very interesting, involving maybe some clairvoyance or
the dream time.
That, yeah,
I'm fascinated with that concept because if I understand it correctly, the Aboriginal and I haven't seen it in many other cultures, but the Aboriginal notion of the dream time says that everything. Well, I guess it's sort of comparable to the Hindu and Buddhist notion of what Maya.
Yeah.
This is the illusion, and the reality is what happens in our dream.
There you go. That makes me think of the Mayan culture, actually, a culture that I think Mel Gibson is doing a great disrespect to.
Oh my God! You know, I made the mistake, Preston, of suggesting that I might go to that movie.
Okay.
And I have repented myself of it. Because I read, God bless them, a couple of archaeologists actually went to see the movie, one from the University of Texas and another review I read from a Vanderbilt University archaeologist.
Okay.
Who just came out of there shaking their heads and their heads in their hands. Oh, you know, what hath Mel wrought? Do you realize that the end of this movie has the Spaniards showing up?
I read that in the review. I haven't seen it yet, but yeah. Yeah, the Spaniards. Yeah, definitely. I read about that.
Showing up on full-blown Mayan culture.
Right.
That ended 400 years before the Spanish got there.
Right, right. And also, so many of the people I hear talking about the film, they speak as if the Mayan people don't exist anymore. And they most certainly do.
The Quiche Maya.
Rigoberta Menchu, the Nobel Peace Prize winner. You know, of course, the establishment tried to totally destroy her and her credibility, you know, by attacking her and her book as not being credible. And they're like, oh, she wasn't there when her grandmother was killed. And it turns out her grandfather was killed and a bunch of cousins and brothers and sisters. And it was amazing how they went after her. But, yeah, The minds are still there, amazingly enough.
And they cling to their existence with tenacious dedication and desperation, because you know the Spanish came along and tried to wipe them out.
Yeah.
Didn't we fund the Guatemalan effort to wipe out the Maya?
That's right. Rios Montt, one of our favorite dictators, went to the School of the Americas, a close friend of Pat Robertson's. Yeah,
exactly.
All his guns, weapons, the training, we poured that in there for a couple decades. 200,000 people killed. But they continue on. They continue on.
And there's something profound going on there. You mentioned the potential or the shamanistic or the spirituality.
Yeah.
At the top of the show, I mentioned our good friend Eugene Finnerman talking about being 4 years late on the millennium. Well, if you're familiar with the Mayan calendar round, all hell literally is supposed to break loose somewhere around December 23rd, 2012.
2012, that's what they say.
But if we're 4 years off on the Gregorian calendar, doesn't that mean December 23rd, 2008?
Okay. I'll have to look back to some of my Terence McKenna material. He did some amazing work on this subject, and he spent a lot of time with shamans and stuff throughout Latin America and other parts of the world. And I'll check that out.
Well, it's fascinating. There's so much, and you know, the Hopi culture in the American Southwest, they've got a coming doomsday scenario, and it bears paying attention to. Because some of the stuff that they talk about, Preston, sounds like, I mean, to the same extent that the right-wingers are fond of saying that the Bible is full of nuclear Holocaust symptoms, the Native American apocalyptic scenarios smell a lot like what we're doing to ourselves right now.
True. And we've got that whole kind of left-behind theology that's so convenient to, you know, mass destruction and fire and stuff like that.
I know. And their tongues shall rot in their mouths, and their eyeballs shall fall out of their head. Oh, believe me.
Why don't they ever bring up the Genesis, you know, where things are being born? And
because,
you know,
that's no fun, Preston.
Okay.
You know, I forget who said it. You know, peace is hard work and boring.
Well, it's like that Chris Hedges book that was so powerful. War is a force that gives us meaning. And he talked about the psychology that goes into a lot of our, you know, wanting to pursue this grand violent cause. But I think most of us, at least 70% of this country now, have found better things to do, you know, and are hoping for a different kind of, way to be in the world.
I think that slow progress is actually being made.
I think so.
Preston, so very good to hear from you, and I wish you the very happiest of New Year's, even though it's sort of an arbitrary date.
Likewise. And once again, to the teachers in the audience, participate.net, and enjoy your free gift.
All right. Well, thank you very kindly for bringing that to our attention.
Sure thing.
Take care, Preston.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Our good friend Preston, who is pretty well snowed in out there in Denver. They've been hit hard the last couple of weeks. It is time for the news. It's more than time for the news, but I'm not going to leave a good conversation for... just because something goes from 5959 to 0000. The conversations themselves are more important than that. This is the Head On Radio Network. We'll be right back. I'm Bob.
This is the Quality News Network. A senior Iraqi official has said that former Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein could be executed as early as this evening. Much of the confusion is related to the Muslim holy days of Eid, which begin tomorrow for Sunnis. In Mogadishu, Somali and Ethiopian troops are strengthening their hold on the city. Somali leaders say their first priority is to restore order and disarm Islamic fighters. Diplomats say they're not optimistic that the weak Somali government can meet those goals, especially if Ethiopian troops leave. Also in Iraq, U.S. authorities have released two Iranians arrested by American forces last week. The U.S. said the two were supporting insurgency, but Iraq's president said he'd invited the two Iranians to Baghdad to assist in a plan to reduce sectarian violence. In Crawford, Texas, President Bush says he needs more time to come up with a new strategy for the war there in Iraq. He says he'll continue to meet with policymakers and will address the nation within the first few days of January. The New York Times says Pentagon officials expect President Bush to expand U.S. forces in Iraq by 17,000 to 20,000 more troops. Most of the force would be stationed in or near Baghdad. A Pentagon spokesman says part of the increase would come from extending the tours of two Marine regiments currently in the Anbar province. In southern Afghanistan, NATO and Afghani forces last night fought off a Taliban attack on a police outpost. 10 militants were killed. In Afghanistan, at least 4,000 suspected militants have been killed this year in the fighting. In Moscow, Russia has threatened to cut off energy supply to its former satellite country of Belarus if it won't pay more than double rates for natural gas. That possible shutdown would mean trouble for Europe, since about 20% of Europe's natural gas is funneled through the Belarus pipeline. In Jerusalem, an Israeli human rights group said today that Israeli security forces killed three times as many Palestinians in 2006 than in 2005. 141 children were among the 660 killed. The report also says that fatal attacks on Israelis by Palestinians had fallen off by 50% to a total of 23. In Colorado, the governor has declared a state of emergency. State still digging out of last week's storm. New blizzard has begun, dumping more than 2 feet of snow overnight. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Run for your lives. The lenders are coming. They're in the mailbox. They're overloading your email. They're on the phone. They won't be denied. The best rate, the biggest bargain, fewer points, too much information. Gold Coast Financial to the rescue. They can offload the overload and handcraft a loan that suits your needs. Are you on lender overload? Relief is just minutes away. Call Gold Coast Financial, 831-649-8757. 831-649-8757. Gold Coast Financial.
Hi, I'm Anthony, owner of the Duplication Connection, and I want to help you grow your business. At the Duplication Connection, we specialize in CD and DVD duplication in quantities from 1 to 1 million. If your company needs mass quantities of CDs or DVDs, you can now use us as one of your primary marketing tools. Thousands of our customers have depended on our fast turnaround and superior quality product for almost 20 years, and so will you. Please call us at 831-373-0493 or visit our website at www.duplicationconnection.com.
British scientists say they'll soon introduce a flu vaccine that's effective against all major strains of the disease, including the avian flu. Researchers say that the inoculations will provide protection for several years without the need for booster shots. Conservationists petitioning the U.S. government to add the North Pacific right whale to the endangered species list. It is the rarest whale in the world and is nearly extinct. In the U.S., the right whale is found only in Alaskan waters. New federal anti-pollution rules go into effect Monday. Better fuels, cleaner diesel engines in new trucks and school buses expected to reduce emissions by 98%. Fines levied by the Federal Election Commission doubled in 2006 to $6.2 million, more than half collected from the government mortgage corporation Freddie Mac for making illegal campaign contributions. Apple says it'll reissue new financial statements from the past 3 years as a result of its stock options investigation. The company says an internal probe indicated its current management was blameless, including Steve Jobs. Wall Street will close for New Year's Monday, also on Tuesday, the official day of mourning for former President Gerald Ford. Light sweet crude oil closing at $61.05 a barrel. Wall Street closing numbers for the week heading into the new year. Dow Jones Industrial Average down 38 points at 12,463. NASDAQ down 10. S&P 500 down 6. There's more at Quality News Network. I'm Barbara Lewis.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Ten minutes after the hour, hour number three of this Friday edition of Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. I am a prostate. Let's go to the phones. Our good friend, our person we hang a lot of our hopes and dreams on. You do realize that, don't you, Cassie?
Yeah.
We really do.
We do, honey.
I'm just one person.
You are that, but you are one. You are one fantastic person.
Well, thank you. And you have a lot of good friends. Every time you have a caller, it's always our good friend this one, our good friend that one.
And I feel that way.
Well, that's good. That's good. I just want to say first that I'm glad to hear that your dad's doing a little bit better.
He is doing considerably better. We have gone from the speech from the doctor where he says he'll never come home to the speech from the doctor where he says he is a remarkable man, he'll be home Tuesday.
Wow.
It is absolutely amazing.
Well, good.
So, you know, we're so excited at the prospect. I can't tell you, Cassie. It's been very, very hard. There have been a lot of tears, and then to turn around and be told that no, it's going to be better is amazing. It's amazing and it's wonderful, and it's exciting.
Well, I'm happy for you.
I still think that my father and I will probably be watching the West Virginia University Mountaineer football game in a hospital room Monday afternoon, but that's okay. I'm just happy to be watching it with him.
Yeah. Well, I'm not much for football, but enjoy it, and I hope your team wins.
Well, thank you.
So, but that's not why I called.
Okay.
I called to talk about the Jackson County Community Service Coalition
uh-huh.
in Mississippi. The same one that Sarge has been calling you about?
The JCCSC.org?
That's the one.
Yes.
And I did a thing on my blog last night, and I've been telling people that they should give money there.
I saw that, yes.
And also gave people lots of pictures of what it looks like there still now, with everything still being destroyed and not fixed yet, and all of the people living with one trailer right next to the other, next to the other, next to the other, next to the other, in the trailer park instead of in houses. And you know that the locks on those are so bad that people are breaking into them. I mean, nobody's safe.
Well, you can probably bust into them with a credit card. I mean, if they're the kind of thing that I'm familiar with, you know, the like travel trailers and things.
I was told a small crowbar.
Oh, my heavens. That's
but,
just
yeah,
and so everything gets
so nobody can leave, or it's just as awful. It just sounds awful.
Well, Cassie, there's a psychological dynamic that's created by that kind of insecurity that you just don't get over.
I know.
People have got to get back. You know, Jim Yancey is absolutely right. People have got to get back into their own homes. Recovery has got to be accomplished. It's not a project; it is a necessity.
Right, and so I am doing two things towards that. One of them is that I gave $20, and I want to say that I do babysitting on just on school vacations. I babysit,
mm-hmm.
and I do odd jobs during the year. And if I can do that and I can find $20 to give, then chances are that pretty much most of the people listening today can find $20.
I think you're right.
And so that's one thing I'm doing. And then the other thing that I'm doing is to get Sarge emailed me today with some information about when in my town they're going to have a truck going down
uh-huh.
there and to get at my school. And Betsy's going to put it at her school, and her son's going to put it at his school to have people collect up furniture and all kinds of things, and I'll bring it to where that truck is going to be on that day.
Wonderful.
So we're going to get, I don't know, from three schools we might even get more than a truck's worth, but to try and give furniture and clothing. Like, we gave a lot of clothing early on, but, like, I've outgrown stuff since we piled it on a year and a half ago.
Well, and I think a lot of the we're gonna try to get clothing together. Of course, the list is things like water heaters, stoves, washers, dryers. Something I had not.
We don't have any of that, but we do have some furniture.
Right.
We do have.
And
sure,
you know,
people at my school, somebody's gonna have a stove.
Sure.
You know, maybe us, but some, you know, we're in an apartment, but somebody's gonna have a stove. Somebody's gonna have. Or somebody's going to say, you know, I wanna get a new stove, and I've been waiting till this one dies, but instead I'll give this one to Katrina.
Right, and most people,
and then I'll get a new stove.
Yeah, most people, when they replace their appliances anymore, it's not because it's ruined. It's not because it's played out or at the end of its functional life. That's right. Not the way America is anymore. We replace it because we don't like the color, or because we've painted the kitchen and the refrigerator doesn't match anymore.
Well, I mean, not in my family, but yeah, I can see that. but I know a number of people who, like, they have one that's electric and then they move into a house that's gas, or they have one that's gas and then they move into a house that's electric and they have to change it.
Right. You know, but the other stuff that's there, asphalt paper or tar paper for roofing, and bundles of shingles for roofing, drywall, sheetrock.
You know,
2x4.
My apartment complex, because they might have extras of stuff. Like, everybody's now getting, you know, brown paint, and everybody's now getting that maybe they have extras from when they did stuff with a different kind of door, or when they did stuff with a different kind of wall. You know what I mean?
Yes, absolutely.
Because they're trying to get them all to match now.
Right. So, you know, there's tremendous potential to actually move this effort.
But
forward.
Why the government's not doing this? I mean, it's great that we are, and I will give my $20, and I will, you know, make flyers, and I will talk to people at school, and I will do all of that. But, like, where's the government, and where's
well,
the
can I cost? Can I take a run at explaining that, Cassie?
Yeah.
where the government? There's a few things. When Bill Clinton became president, he had seen the absolute failure of the Bush 41, George's daddy, his administration's failure in dealing with, I believe it was Hurricane Andrew, that absolutely demolished South Florida.
Right.
Okay? And Bill Clinton, being a guy who, you know, this guy was a Rhodes Scholar, okay? I mean, no slouch as far as a student is concerned. Really, a genius, and wanted to learn and know things and worked on things with his mind. He looked at the response to Andrew and said, this is unacceptable for the government of the people of the United States to respond this way. I'm going to take the head of FEMA, Federal Emergency Management Agency, and I'm going to elevate the head of FEMA to be a member of my cabinet. You know, just like the Secretary of Defense, just like the Secretary of State, the Secretary of Education, all of the Secretary of Energy, the FEMA director is going to be a member of my cabinet. And we are going to make the response to emergencies and natural disasters a cabinet-level task. And that means it will be worked on at the highest levels of government, okay?
Mm-hmm. Well, that makes good sense.
It sure does. That's why when George W. Bush took office, the first thing he did, or among the first things he did, was to kick the FEMA secretary out of his cabinet. Okay? Now, that's track A.
Right.
He took FEMA out of the loop. Then, with the reorganization of the Department of, or the creation of the Department of Homeland Security, FEMA was placed underneath that. I don't know about you, but it just makes my eyes cross thinking about something like that. But it is true. FEMA and Brownie, you remember Brownie?
Yeah.
Brownie was put.
Heck of a job.
Right. Brownie was put under the direction of Michael Skeletor Chertoff. I mean, you've seen pictures of that creepy dude, haven't you?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, just, you know, if you saw the guy in a dark alley, you would run screaming to get away from him. So he puts him under Chertoff. And Chertoff couldn't care less what happens to a bunch of poor people in a hurricane. All right? So that's problem two.
Okay.
Now, here is problem three, and this is the overarching reason, or the overarching answer, where is the government in this? When you are dealing, Cassie, with Republicans, especially these so-called neoconservative Republicans, you are dealing with people who hate, actively hate, the very idea of government by the people, of the people, and for the people. Okay? These people exist...
Which is our government. That's what our government's for.
Supposed to be. Absolutely. But these people don't think that way. These people are ruled and controlled by philosophies and policies put forward by the likes of a really nasty man named Grover Norquist. Okay? You've heard of him? Okay. Grover Norquist is famous for saying he believes that nobody should ever pay taxes.
Is he the one that wants to drown the government in the bathtub?
That's the guy. We want to make government so small and so weak that you can drown it in a bathtub. Now, you see, what you're dealing with in these people, Cassie, are people who will fail in government because they want government to fail. In other words, they create a self-fulfilling prophecy. Make sense?
Mm-hmm.
If you're in the control of the government...
I understand when people think about that, like, when you're just thinking. But there's people dying, and there's people getting ripped off, and there's people not with their family. Like, it's one thing to talk about it, but this is real people. I mean, this is, you know, Sarge and Ray and people we know.
Yeah. Well, all I can tell you is that those they are not real people to these neoconservative Republicans. Because, did you see the news story a couple of days ago, Cassie? $2 billion have already been identified as absolutely wasted in the Katrina follow-up?
I don't understand that at all.
Well, what that means is...
No, I mean, I understand.
I know, but just by way of example, how do you lose $2 billion? You know, I would be weeping in the streets if I lost 100.
Yeah.
Not 100 billion. But what happens is, the way these people govern... They think that private enterprise is the answer to everything. Government can't do anything because they have already decided in this self-fulfilling prophecy that government has to fail because government is bad. Okay? So instead of the government taking your money and our money and going down and fixing what's wrong from Katrina, they let contracts out. And so there's a contractor who lives in the Tony suburbs outside Washington, D.C., and he gets a $10 million contract to go and do cleanup for Katrina. Well, he skims some money off the top of the $10 million as his profit.
Okay.
Then he takes the remainder of the money and he hires what's called a subcontractor. And the subcontractor takes some of the money off the top and he hires other subcontractors.
And do any of them actually fix stuff, or do they just reject everybody's claim?
Well, no. At the end of the day, you wind up with a little bit of recovery work being done by so-called illegal immigrant workers working for $3.50 an hour.
That's so ridiculous.
It's not just ridiculous, Cassie. It's criminal.
Yeah. Do you... This may sound stupid. And
I doubt it.
Okay. If the people who are thinking this way, if they really went there and they, instead of staying in their fancy cars and their fancy hotels and all of that, if they actually went and met real people and went to see kids that aren't in school and went to talk to real Americans, real people in Louisiana and in Mississippi that are still missing so much. do you think it would make any difference, or do you think they're just too mean to even get have that matter?
I don't think that they would go anywhere near where the real damage lies. I don't think they would run the risk, Cassie, of ever finding out that these people really are suffering, because they have a mainstream media that has already, I mean, you know, and rest assured, Anderson Cooper and all these other media corpses will be in New Orleans for Mardi Gras. And they will beam pictures around the world of Mardi Gras in New Orleans, and they'll say, see, everything's okay.
In order to get to Mardi Gras, don't they have to drive past some of these places? I mean, you don't just take a helicopter into Mardi Gras with your eyes closed, right? I mean, you drive there.
But that's not, but sure, but it doesn't matter, because that's not the story. The story for the corporate media is that everything's okay. And that's what will be reported. And that's what these comfortable people who hate our government will see on their televisions. And they'll say, see, private enterprise works. The free market is saving the Gulf Coast. They're no less self-delusional than someone who is profoundly mentally ill or profoundly in the depths of addiction.
Okay.
Because their addiction, instead of being to a chemical, their addiction is to power, and their addiction is to money. It could be said that they have a disease of the heart, and it can only be cured with the administration of gold.
Well, I think we need to do an intervention for them.
I think we do, too. And you know, we're all hoping that this past November 7th was the beginning of that intervention. You know, government can solve, and by government, I mean you and me, we the people, Cassie. We can solve the problems on the Gulf Coast.
I'm not one of we the people yet.
Yes, you are. Yes, you are. You most assuredly are. You're exercising your First Amendment rights, Cassie. You're part of we the people.
Okay.
We can make it work if we determine that we will make it work. But before we can make it work, we've got to run all of these no good, rotten... What do you say about these people? They hate our country, Cassie. They really, really hate our country. They hate our government. They hate our form of government. And we have got to run them out of the government before they can do any more harm. You know, it's worth remembering, maybe you might want to do some research on this. There's a statute out there. There's a federal law called the Davis-Bacon Act.
I've heard of that one, too. I even know what it says.
Okay. Well, then you know probably that shortly after Katrina hit, George Bush signed an executive order that canceled Davis-Bacon for Katrina recovery. Now, Davis-Bacon provides that people will be paid a fair wage when they do government work and are paid with taxpayer dollars.
Right. And he said it was a minimum wage instead of the wage that was supposed to be in Louisiana.
Right. Now, a great deal of pressure was applied to him, and he finally relented and rescinded that order. But, you know, in that...
Why do they think that we can live on that?
They don't. Oh, Cassie, they don't think you can live on that. I hope you understand. They don't care whether you can live on that. I mean, that's. I know it's hard to come to terms with.
They're addicted to mean.
Yeah. Well, they are. Mean is good for them. But they don't care whether the lower class or the middle class, or even some parts of the upper class, when you get right down to it, these people, they don't care if they live or die.
So what kind of, does the money make them happy? I mean, do they ever get happy? Or, I mean,
these
for
kind
everything
of
you want to say about religion, there's a lot in religion that says that we get, that we're happier, that we need to help other people, and that we, you know,
Well, I'm kind of two minds about this. I can't say whether or not monstrous amounts of money will make you happy because I don't have any empirical data to back it up. I've never had humongous amounts of money.
Me either.
And it seems to me that the people who are saying, well, money can't buy you love or money can't buy you happiness are usually people who have neither of either one and are looking for an excuse. I don't see Warren Buffett sitting in sackcloth and ashes talking about how miserable his existence is, or Bill Gates, or the Bush family, or any of America's other uber super rich. I don't see them walking around talking about how unhappy they are. Now, on the other hand, people who have massive amounts of money like that usually spend most of their time trying to make their money have baby money. And that's why the tax cuts for the rich were no good, because the rich weren't going to do anything with it. If you want to give tax cuts in America, hand out free money to poor people. Hand out free money to the middle class, because you know what we'll do? We'll go buy a refrigerator.
Yeah.
We'll buy a television. We'll remodel the kitchen. We'll put in new plumbing. We will make the money work. Whereas when you give it to the super rich, they just stick it in with all the other money and let it make more money. And the more money never does anybody any good.
Or they put it in a bank in a different country where it doesn't help us anyway.
Exactly. So, you know, this is a long answer to a fairly straightforward question, and I apologize. But the reason, where's government in all of this, is government is failing because it is being run by people who see it as their duty to make government fail. And that's heartbreaking to me. It's betrayal.
That's not what we're learning about America in school. You and I have talked about this before.
Right.
The stuff that they're teaching us. I want to still be true. And
well,
it's harder and harder with this government.
You have a chance to help make it be true again.
I will. I am going to do that.
I believe you when you say that.
In 2028. Maybe some stuff before that.
Yeah, but Cassie for president.
You know who's going to be my running mate?
Who's that?
Bruce Birch's son.
Okay, well that works. He's a mighty good boy.
Yeah. Yeah. He and I were chatting.
Well, you know, I think
it's going to be my running mate.
That sounds really good. We've got, because there's a lot of negativity to all this, Cassie, but the other side of it is that I hope somewhere along the way you can hang on to some idealism. I mean, I've still even got a little bit of it.
Right.
And you know, I'm ancient.
You're not that ancient. I heard you give your age yesterday. You're not that ancient.
Some days it feels ancient. But I have idealism. I want our government to be what it can be. I want it to be what it was designed to be. And not the tawdry, ugly, tarnished up cesspool mess that these people have made it. You know, but the trick is we've got to run them all out of government and never let them back in again.
Right. So, okay, before I go.
Okay.
Can I give the address for giving the money to help Jackson?
You absolutely can.
Isn't doing it. www.jccsc.org. And the other way to find that is to go to Powers and Morrison and find Political Teen Tidbits by Freckles. And you can read everything I've written about it, and not just the little bit that I said out loud.
Okay. Well, you know, thank you for what you're doing.
Well, thank you.
It matters. I hope.
And thank you for teaching me all the stuff about history that I haven't learned at school.
I don't know. There are people out there who would say that what I'm telling you is not history. But I believe in shooting straight with everybody. You know, I got that from my dad. He did that to me the other day. You know, when he thought he was checking out pretty quick, he looked at me and said, you know, I'm going. And I said, that's hard to hear. And he said, I've been straight with you for your entire life. I'm not going to stop now.
Right.
So, you know, I believe in being straight with people. And, you know, no one of my generation or any older generation should ever sugarcoat anything for yours. Because if you're going to restore the idealistic principles that this country was founded on, you've got to go into it, Cassie, with your eyes wide open. And I think you are.
I am trying.
Cassie, thank you so much, and have a safe and happy New Year.
I can go to dinner.
Okay.
All right. Have a happy New Year, too.
All right. Bye now.
Bye.
You know, it's true. I do call everyone our good friend, and I mean it. And I wasn't pulling Cassie's leg. She gives me a lot of hope for the future. A lot of hope. Let's go on and talk to our good friend Sarge. Hey, Sarge, welcome back.
Hey, I think Cassie said a lot of what I wanted to say.
Isn't she something?
Bless her little heart. I love her. But one thing she didn't say, and I'm going to say it, Jim Yancey is going to be on with Mike Malloy tonight.
Great.
So I'm real excited about that, and so is Jim. We also have announced the schedule for the Mississippi Hurricane Project. I'll just call it that. I don't know what else to call it.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm really, really excited about the prospects of what's going to take place. The people in Phoenix have said that they would swing by Austin and pick up whatever Cassie and them managed to put together. And now we'll get things set up coming from your way, and man, we just might give Jim more than he wants.
Well, you know, I know how busy Jim is, but I would like for some of the busyness that Jim has to not be worrying about stuff.
Right. And believe me, he is just excited. He sent me an email today after I sent him the information that I'd received. He said, "That's the best news I've heard all day." So, I mean, he's really excited about it, and he's looking forward to it. So I think we're really giving him a lift, and he needs it, because the fact is he has been fighting this thing so long and so hard with nothing in back of him hardly. And so
that list is an amazing list, and I mean amazing in terms of like what I said talking to Cassie, Sarge. There's stuff on there I wasn't thinking about. 2x4s. They need 2x4s.
Right. Right, 2x4s.
I don't think twice about a 2x4.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's why I went to him, because I knew Jim was a straight shooter, and I said, I want to get with somebody who will actually, actually put the stuff to use, because I don't like people's efforts being shortchanged by some greedy SOB, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And I've talked with Jim for so long. I just feel like Jim, well, I know Jim is as just as good a man as you could ask for. And I'm really happy that we're doing all of this. And I don't know how we're going to work it yet, but I'm hoping maybe we can get some radio broadcast out of that area.
You know, I would love for that to happen. I've been thinking about it. I can't commit to anything.
I know you can.
But if there was some way to, I want to be down there. I'd like to do 2 weeks from there.
Well, now what the plan is they're going to try and get the stuff here to Jackson County on February the 14th, Valentine's Day. Isn't that something? Isn't that some planning? I read that and I said, man, that is some smart thinking. That's a good time to deliver it there, because it'll stick in people's minds.
Exactly.
And I'm really.
Well, I'm. You know what I'm turning over in my mind, though. I mean, it's the business of needing shingles and tar paper and 2x4s and sheetrock is what is really, really hanging in my head.
I contacted Jim and told him about what Dr. Bill said about Lowe's.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, Sarge, he says, I wish y'all would contact them. He said, we have talked with them, and they told us they wouldn't give any more discounts.
They don't need to give discounts. They need to give stuff.
I know. And they won't even, they refuse to even give Jim discounts.
Well, you know, certainly I can't promise any outcome, but what's going through my mind is, you know, screw Lowe's, okay? No offense, but we need to go to the manufacturers of the stuff.
Yeah, Lowe's is just another one of those mega corporation fascist
Well, I mean, maybe they've done some good along the way. I don't know, so I'm not going to hammer them right now. But the fact of the matter is, we need to go to the manufacturers of sheetrock. We need to go to Georgia Pacific, not Lowe's. We need to go to Georgia Pacific for the 2x4s.
Well, that might be a good idea.
We need to go to Owens Corning, not Lowe's or Home Depot. We need to go to Owens Corning for the shingles.
I think I'll check on Georgia Pacific myself, maybe after the first of the year when everything gets settled back in. But I think that's a great idea. I'm going to follow up on that. By the way, I want to mention something before I forget it. Benedict at Large at the chat room.
Yeah.
He's an Ivy League graduate.
Yes, he is.
And he said that he is going to tell people in the Ivy League to look out for Cassie and see that she gets a scholarship to an Ivy League school.
Boy, I want that to happen, I didn't get the Ivy League education, but I was very fortunate to get to start at a very small liberal arts college, and I'm a believer in the liberal arts in this. And in many ways, it's the liberal arts that's the very core of what goes on in the Ivy League. I got to start college at a place where, you know, the freshman survey classes that state colleges have, you know, 350 students, there were 15. You know,
well, you know, if
you can't hide in those classes. You actually, that's one of the things. You got to do the work.
Well, you know, if I had it to do all over again, the only thing I would probably change is I would not go to that Baptist college. But as far as Southern Miss goes, hey, you couldn't give me a scholarship anywhere that would be I would take faster than I would the Southern Miss.
Well, see, that's how I feel about WVU, or as we like to call it, Harvard on the Mon. But it's being observed in the chat room right now that there are things that an Ivy League diploma will do for you that others won't.
Sure.
And there's no getting around that. I know brilliant people, lots of, and I know brilliant people who, you know, never set foot in a college a day in their life.
And then look at your nut brain in the White House.
Well, you know, I've made the argument a couple of times that Yale and Harvard should be disassembled brick by brick because they let that sucker at, you know, they demeaned themselves by giving him the degrees.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's the thing. They gave him the degrees, Sarge.
Sure,
he damn sure didn't earn them.
Yeah, you can tell talking with him. Yeah, here's what's really scary is when he first ran for office in Texas, he went down there and he tried to pass himself off as an intellectual. Can you believe that?
Oh, Lord.